Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I did read somewhere that you were a Dawson's Creek fan.
Well, that show is huge.
Just remember that fan is short for fanatic. Okay, yeah, I'm done.
All right. Well, good to know.
Michael and I were more the OC generation. Dawson's was a little early.
We're similar age. Yeah. I'm 44, so
that would be similar.
Similar. Yeah, we're similar.
By the way, just so Tony knows, this is a story about Andre Dawson, and he lived here.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Plausibly live and from an as-yet-undisclosed third-floor location, Chevy Chase, Maryland. We're on the air. Leon Harris, Chris Saliza, Michael Kornheiser, Nigel. Later in the show, Jason Lockefort joins us, and I'll get to Neil Greenberg in a second.
I got
to
tell you, though, that Dawson's Creek
I never saw it.
It was physically jaw-dropping. I listened to that podcast on my way down to the Wizards game yesterday. I sat there with my mouth wide open like, Chris,
I'm not going to let that moment go by, man. I mean, you get very few windows of opportunity to talk to your idols.
Was Dawson's Creek on regular television or was
TBS,
it on cable?
TBS, I think.
TBS or WBS. You watched it?
I knew I was aware of it, but I didn't never watch it.
6-year run from high school through college.
I'm unaware.
Dawson Leary, played by James Vanderbeek's the main character. Joey, a girl named Joey, who's his love interest by Katie Holmes, and his best friend, Pacey Witter, played by Joshua Jackson. It's really wonderful stuff.
I was lost. I was lost in that.
Andre Dawson, yeah, I believe, no somehow.
And Tim Raines, weirdly, was part of it.
Really weird. I'm going to begin today, however briefly, I'm going to tease this because we have Neil Greenberg coming on later in the show.
That's right.
To explain through numbers, not numerology, but through like fancy statistics about the Washington Capitals. I don't want to turn off the audience. I'm going to get out of this
briefly.
A lot
of puck talk this week.
The Washington Capitals lost last night for the first time. Their winning streak ended at 9. They lost to the Pittsburgh Penguins. They lost 8-7.
Yeah.
There are no scores like that ever in hockey. Nobody gets 7 and loses.
Yeah.
Nobody goes up 3-0, then goes down 5-3. This doesn't happen.
Did Pittsburgh go for 2 at the end?
I think they did. I think they had a quarterback draw to get 2. In that streak, they beat some really good teams. They beat Columbus, which hadn't lost in a year. They beat Chicago, the top team in the West, and a Stanley Cup champion 3 of the last 5 years. They beat Pittsburgh, the current Stanley Cup champions. They beat Philadelphia, a perennial playoff team. And they scored at least 5 in every one of those games.
Yeah.
They just lost with 7. This is not possible. So later in the show, we're bringing Neil Greenberg on, and now we can move off that.
Answer me that, Greenberg.
That was just amazing. The big story in sports yesterday and last night was a basketball game. And thank God this basketball game is now over, so now we don't have to watch the NBA until June when these same two teams meet in the best 4 out of 7 in the finals, Golden State and Cleveland. Much had been made of the fact that Cleveland had not only won 4 in a row, 3 in the playoffs last year, coming back from 1-3, where LeBron James had at least arguably the greatest 3-game stretch ever in the NBA, because he won it. He won it by himself.
He won it single-handedly.
He did. He won it. He had good players around him, but he won that thing. And then they'd beaten him, I guess, Christmas Day.
That's right.
And beaten him by 1,000 points Christmas Day.
Soundly.
Yeah, they did. And so the storyline was, does Golden State have to win this game, blah, 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 and that Steph Curry, going into the game in those 4 games, specifically those 4 against Cleveland, had more turnovers than assists. This was an undercurrent of the game. My opinion always was this game means nothing. It's a regular season game in January, and everybody knows that these are the two best teams, regardless of this. But saying all that, that was not a game. Golden State showed you what Golden State can be at its best. At its best, it's the best team. At Cleveland's best, they have the best player in basketball, and they have a fine group around him. They're not as good as Golden State at their best, which doesn't happen all the time. Golden State shot 15-34 from 3. That's great. They had 51% from the floor in the game. They were up by almost 30 by the end of the first half. And in the first half, this is a statistic that will mean very little to people who are not big basketball fans. But in the first half, the Warriors had 26 assists, and Cleveland had 4. That's not possible. It's just not possible. A great team can't just get four. And 26 is an unbelievable amount of assists. It really is. So with all that, and they won 126-91, and Duran had 21, Thompson had 26, Curry had 20 and 11 assists. I don't think he had 11 turnovers. Yep. He had 11 assists. With that, the headline, of course, is Draymond Green. Chris, why don't you start?
Well, so the game is already, in truth, close to out of hand by the time this happens.
And it's in the first.
It's in the second quarter.
Early in the second quarter.
The Warriors are up 17-ish, maybe 18.
About right.
LeBron gets the ball like he often does in the middle of the court on their defensive end and just freight trains it up the middle.
He gets to
half court. And Draymond is coming from his left. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he runs it. He clearly intentionally fouls him because, I mean, my belief is you can't do the, like, I mean, people on News Channel 8 will be able to see this, but you can't do the sort of slap at LeBron.
Right? Doesn't mean anything.
Nothing will stop that dude unless you stand in front of him and basically tackle him.
How far from the basket does this
occur? Oh, I mean, it's half court.
It's not even close to the basket.
But it's going to be a breakaway.
You know
it's
going to be a breakaway. It is an act of malevolence. LeBron goes down
as though someone in the stands has sniped him.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, I just, look.
Which is impossible to believe.
It is impossible to knock that man. Plus, you can in the replay they show LeBron. See, the only way LeBron could go down like that is if you are totally blindsided. I can believe that. If you do not see the other person coming and he runs into you, you don't see it. You go, but LeBron sees him. LeBron looks to his left, sees Draymond, and sort of braces himself. There's just no chance that that would happen. It doesn't mean that Draymond didn't foul him on purpose hard because he did.
Boy, Draymond is not a little guy himself, and it was a shoulder that he hit him with.
Oh,
it looked like he was playing for the Steelers. It was a shoulder.
He's a Michigan State
right
guy.
In the middle of LeBron's chest.
When Tom Izzo goes to recruit people, he looks at the jacket you're wearing. How big are your shoulders? Michigan State guys are tough guys.
Yeah.
But the foul is outrageous.
And it was so out in the open. It was unavoidable. And LeBron
he gets a flagrant one.
You got a flagrant one.
Because he's not shooting or he'd get a flagrant one.
Well, he wasn't going for the ball.
Right.
He never reached for the ball. It was completely a shoulder into LeBron's chest. However, LeBron, when he hit the deck, I thought that was a little bit diva-ish because he hit on his side and then rolled and
you
laid
thought
on
it was a
stomach.
Vlade Divac thing.
Yeah, a little bit because he grabs for his chin. I never saw him hit his chin. He gets up and he's feeling his face.
And people should know Leon is from Akron. So if Leon is going against LeBron,
and
it's hard to tell.
Leon had his Cavs gear on when they were on their run.
That's right.
So what do you make? So here is the question, and I will concede that I said we were going to do this before the show started. What is the essential qualitative difference between the way Draymond Green plays? And Draymond Green's a really good player, but he's always kicking somebody or fouling somebody. He's taking it upon himself to be the commissioner of pain in the NBA. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between the way he plays and Grayson Allen plays? What's different?
Wow, that's a great comparison. Grayson
Allen is a dirty player. He is a dirty player. He is also... I'm not saying he's going to be a great pro. He's a great college player.
Well, is there any debate that Draymond can be a dirty player?
Well, he is a dirty player.
I mean, I think they're neither of them. The best case scenario for both of them, which I do not believe, is they lack fundamental motor control of the lower half of their body. I mean, that's the only because they both. Draymond does the same thing with
the Rockettes. Kicking everybody.
It's a willful lack of control.
I just think, like, again, did I play big time college basketball? No. Have I played pickup basketball for my entire life? Yes. You can't. There's no way that's by accident. The things that Draymond does and the things that Grayson Allen does, it just doesn't happen. I'm 41 years, almost 41 years old. I played for well more than half of my life. Mm-hmm. I've literally never done that.
Yeah, same here. But here's one thing, one difference I would make. Grayson Allen did it against a smaller guy. LeBron is a bigger guy than Draymond. Draymond basically, I think Draymond's got a personal thing with the guys that he's doing it to, and he's doing it against guys that are his size. Grayson's done it against smaller guys.
That to me is
more punkish if you're doing that to Elon. Why do you need to do that to that school and to a guy that small? I don't know.
Do you want both guys on your team?
Yes.
Yes, so do I. So do I. I mean,
I think that I would disagree. I don't The difference, I would say, is I believe that Draymond is significantly more calculated with what he does.
Yeah.
He clearly did that on purpose yesterday. There's no question. And I think many of
he
the
was
things,
grinning when he put on yes. his yeah. shirt. He was yeah. grinning.
Oh, he was mugging for the cameras when yeah. he went to the bench.
Grayson Allen, particularly after the one that they indefinitely suspended him for one game, he goes
that was
to the
Elon
he
one.
Goes yeah. to the bench. And has something
that's
like my yeah. son, who's 7 years old, would have
a
like
tantrum.
I think that's much less controlled. There's something going on there when he plays. He's too competitive. There's an anger issue. Like Draymond strikes me as a guy who uses his willingness to do stuff like that strategically. Doesn't always work, but he thinks right. it's strategic, as opposed to someone who's just out of control with his emotions with Grayson Allen. So I'd rather, yes to Draymond, mm-hmm. no to Grayson Allen.
They ask, the Golden State Warriors ask Draymond Green to do more for them than any other player mm-hmm. they have.
Yeah.
They ask him to play defense and hustle
against
and rebound
the best
and, take
player on the other team.
And take the biggest guy on.
Yeah.
I would suggest to you that missing Draymond Green for an extended period of time would actually be worse now that they have Durant than either missing Durant or Thompson or Curry.
Yeah.
Because he does something that they
can't do. Well, because Durant, Curry,
they can't
Thompson
do that.
Are,
yeah.
They can't do
that. I'm just looking at his line last night, Tone, because it was, I mean, they again, the game was over effectively about a quarter yeah. in. So it's not as though it was, you know, but here's his line. Let me see if I can find it here. Sorry, I'm on the internets. Okay. He played 34 minutes, which is far more than the
he
other.
Didn't,
he played,
and he didn't need to play 34.
He took no. He took six shots. He made four.
Hmm.
He had 13 rebounds and 11 assists. And
he played
zero,
center.
Zero,
yeah. Played center
zero turnovers.
Yeah, he's yeah. really good.
He was a, just FYI, in plus minus, a plus 42.
Jeez.
Which is really which good. Is just by comparison, Durant was a plus 21. So it's not like yeah. everybody had. I mean, you know, no, the guy's really valuable.
Now, if I hadn't watched that the whole first half, and that's pretty much when I checked out was after the first half. If I hadn't watched the whole first half, I would have walked into the room and saw the score. I would have just said, "Well, it's a midseason game. Cleveland's probably just disinterested."
Right.
But their starters were in late into the fourth quarter. They kept their starters in, so it wasn't like they were laying down.
No, they got beat.
They got stomped.
They got beat. And if you're the coach, now I don't know how much power Tyronn Lue has. I think
T-Lew.
He has no power. I think LeBron has all the power. But my guess is that if you're the coach, you say, you know what? I want to keep my starters in because I actually want them to remember this. Mm-hmm. I actually yeah. want them to remember that they were in this
yeah.
when we meet again in June.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't meet in June, that would be one of the biggest upsets in the history of the NBA. These two teams are that much better than everybody else. It's a little tougher for Golden State because whatever you think of the 3, 4, 5, 6 teams in the league, they're all out there.
Yeah.
They're not in the East. There's zero chance that Cleveland can be beaten. Zero chance. They can't be beaten.
The interesting thing is I think with Durant now, you can have two of those three guys firing on all cylinders and Draymond. So two of Clay, Curry, and Durant.
Yeah,
and
you can win.
And you go, what's interesting, I'm just looking at the line. Basically, you can't have what Cleveland had last night. They're not good enough to withstand this. LeBron, 6-for-18. Irving, 6-for-19.
Kevin Love got no 3 points.
Love, yeah. 1-for-6.
You can't have
it. They need those three dudes. You figure LeBron is going to get hit.
And especially on a night when the Warriors were shooting, 60% of the first half?
They're just,
you can't do that.
So
can't
it was fun to watch for a half, and mm-hmm. it gave us something to talk about, and now we're done. And later in the show, Leon will describe going to the Wizards game with some intimate circle of friends that he had yesterday.
Interesting performance there, too.
Yeah, we will talk about that when we return. But when we do return, Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports will join us. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
It's good that we talk about sports because it leads us into the SeatGeek read. SeatGeek is the smart way to buy and sell tickets for live events. The NFL playoffs are here. There'll be 2-3 full games left, and each game is a can't-miss experience. You can use SeatGeek to find the best deals on tickets to the NBA and the NHL games, both of which we've talked about, college basketball, and we will talk about that, much to the chagrin of Chris Saliza, and concerts. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck, and that's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You will immediately see any underpriced seats, and you'll be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. For example, yesterday at Georgetown, you could have gotten a seat for like 25 cents.
No, they pay you to go, actually.
Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. The best of all, listeners to this fine quality podcast get a $20 rebate off of their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, here's what you do. You download the SeatGeek app, SeatGeek. You go to the settings tab and you click on add a promo code. And when it comes up, you add the promo code Tony, T-O-N-Y. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you have made your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Tony today.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
It's a lot of music going on there. This is Phil Collins of Raleigh, North Carolina, which I believe is the capital of North Carolina. His band is called Daylight's Wasting, and the song is called A Little Sentimental. Michael, tell people if they want to submit their original music how they can do it.
They can email it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Very pleasant beginning. Phil Collins, not that Phil Collins. Jason Lockenfour of CBS Sports joins us now. There's a thousand questions that should be asked first, so I'm going to miss. I mean, obviously, you got to get to Antonio Brown very, very quickly. But I just want to start with this, just for sort of an overall perspective, Jason. You ever seen anything like Aaron Rodgers?
Boy, oh boy. You know, I kind of grapple with this because we live in this time now where whatever we all see collectively, we then all comment on social media, and it sort of amplifies this perception that, oh, that was the greatest blank ever. But I do think that we're at a point here now, and especially this guy's got 4 to 6 seasons, you know, probably decent seasons ahead of him, depending on if he pushes it like Tom Brady or, you know, what his goals end up being and how good his team is, et cetera. But, you know, it's time for him to be measured with Unitas and Marino and Elway and, you know what I mean, who else you put on that pedestal, and not so much, you know, his peers, you know, as in Roethlisberger, you know, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton. I think the length and breadth of this is now reaching a point where most people who are really paying attention, who particularly the stats are ridiculous, but when you couple the stats with these just unbelievable plays that sort of define him, and let's face it, they've been playing playoff games there for about 2 months straight, and he consistently has been the best player on the field, making just sort of outlandish plays that single-handedly win games. The defense isn't great. The run game is very good, but he's been missing key cogs in the passing game, and it just doesn't really seem to matter. So, especially if he gets a second Lombardi trophy, I think, you know, again, then it's not even to me like an Eli thing. You know, it's more you pick the 5 to 6 greatest quarterbacks of all time in your estimation and then measure this guy against him, and on most measures, he's going to be right there.
I watch him, and I think that Brady is the greatest of all time, or certainly in the sentence, and my sentence has three names. It has Montana, Unitas, and Brady. But when I watch Rodgers, and Wilbon makes this point too, he's more exciting because he's more mobile. Tom Brady knows his limitations and plays to his limitations. Aaron Rodgers appears to have no particular limitation. I don't know if he stays hot against Atlanta, though he's indoors. He's got a chance. It's not like a weather deal. But he's not playing with Hall of Famers on offense. No. He's just not, as neither was
doesn't
Brady.
Doesn't his mobility make that comparison to Elway more apt?
Yeah.
I think
and Steve does, Young, and I think he surpassed Young. Yeah. So.
Yeah, Young is more like Koufax because the time frame, you know what I mean, just isn't as great. And Elway, I mean, when you look at what we consider standard statistical measures now, especially QB rating, there's literally no comparison between Elway and Aaron Rodgers. And just the volume of what Aaron Rodgers is doing now, too. I mean, they throw the ball is thrown so much more now, just in general. And, you know, Green Bay in particular, I mean, You know, they've had years where they just can't run the ball because people are worried about Eddie Lacy's weight, or, you know, guys are injured, or the offensive line, which has been very good this year, has just faltered. And there is just there's a certain sort of exclamation point to his box scores where, when again, you look at them cumulatively, I can't even say that word.
We know the word.
Yeah, I finally got it. Third time's the charm. And you say, wow. And then if you've watched the game, you say, that doesn't even tell the story because you had to see this play he made in the second quarter on 3rd and 18. Or, you know what I mean, you had to see the entirety of the fourth quarter to appreciate just how much he meant to that victory.
So by way of comparison, what makes Joe Montana so great is in the Super Bowls that Joe Montana won, he had something like 11 touchdown passes and no interceptions.
Yeah.
And that is, ultimately, no matter what debate you're in, once you get to that number, the other person has to say, well, okay, they have to concede. Aaron Rodgers, and I'm not trying to say that winning 8 games in a row, even though you have to win every one of them to get into the playoffs and stay in the playoffs, is the same as a Super Bowl. But Aaron Rodgers' last 8 is 21-1. 21-1
yeah.
in games he has to win.
Wow.
That's,
yeah.
right? That's
well,
a big deal.
It's pretty good.
And again, I mean, and I guess you start going down the rabbit hole a little bit with some of these arguments, but, you know, go look at the dynasty teams in San Francisco and go look at the fact that really for the totality of his time there, I mean, he left in 94, whatever it was, he had Plan B free agency coming in, and he goes to the Chiefs in the mid-90s. But really, Bill Walsh didn't have to worry about, oh, my God, how much above market am I going to have to give my left tackle next year to keep him? And you know what I mean? Oh, wait, there's no way we're going to be able to keep Ronnie Lott because of the cap. Like, you know, there was an abundance, a preponderance of talent across that roster, and you pretty much could pencil them all back in year after year after year. This is such a different scenario.
And the West Coast offense was something of a novelty still back then, wasn't it? I mean, it wasn't like the entire league had time to adjust to it and figure it out.
No, Walsh was ahead of people.
Mm-hmm.
Walsh was always ahead of people, and he had two great people to run that. I mean, although I don't know that he coached Steve Young. Did Walsh coach Steve Young, or was he out by then?
I
don't know that he did, but he was on the team.
I don't think
so. He
knew
it was in good hands. All right, let me. I'm going to take this one thing very, very small on Matt Ryan that everybody thinks he will be the MVP. Just please tell me that giving Matt Ryan the MVP is because after a while you say, well, I just can't keep giving it to Brady and Rodgers. You just can't do it. It's sort of like LeBron. It's why somebody else gets the MVP in basketball. Or am I wrong on this one?
No, I think there's something to that new face and look at, you know, look at the gross numbers. You look at just the end of the year stats compared to everybody else. And it is sort of, that there is a huge jump there. I went down and broke it down though. You know, nobody played defense in that division. I mean, they pretty much had a subsidy by playing 6 games where the other team's pretty much going to spot you 35. And that's just the reality. And his numbers within that division, I mean, he completed like 75% of his passes for like 330 yards a game and a QB rating of literally, I think it was 138.5 when I looked it up. I mean, it basically was like those 6 games, he's perfect. Now, he still had to show up. He still had to do all that. I get it. But I think that has a lot to do with why his numbers, there is this chasm between even, you know, Rodgers and Breeze and whoever else had big-time numbers versus, you know, the final stats for Matt Ryan. I don't have a vote for that, but, as I sat around and decided what columns I was going to write and who I was going to support, he wouldn't have got my vote, you know, and I don't even know that he would have been second, to be honest with you, because...
Whoa, what happened to Jason?
To Derek Carr.
Okay, we just lost you for 10 seconds.
Oh,
it's okay.
Really?
Let me move off this to the story that when Wilbon and I saw this, and we're old, and we don't do a lot of social media, or as Bill Belichick would say, Snapface, an InstaChat. We don't do a lot of that. Antonio Brown, I don't know how this works, Jason. When I was on teams or around teams that the coach talked, you actually had to listen to the coach. He's taking photos of himself, and he's preening into a camera at the very moment that Mike Tomlin is cursing about the Patriots, which is going to annoy the Patriots, and Mike Tomlin has every right to do. Mike Tomlin shouldn't have to think, oh, my God, my players are live streaming what I'm doing, and this clown is singing and dancing.
I'm live streaming
what
this.
What are you doing?
You talk. I'm Facebook Live-ing this whole thing.
Tell me what, and he's a great player.
Yeah.
Tell me what this guy is doing.
It was take your phone to work day, Tone. And I think we're all blowing this out of proportion. It was like a field trip for America inside the Steelers locker room. I think it's the wave of the future. No, look, I mean, you can't really defend it. It's simpleton behavior. He should know better. I suspect there will be a big old fine coming his way. I talked to the league about it because there's social media policies about times before and after games when you're allowed to do this, and they basically said, oh, well, we're not going to have to weigh in because the Steelers are going to be handling this one. And then I reach out to the Steelers, and they're like, well, yeah, I'm sure he'll be fine, but they weren't freaking out about it. They weren't like the sky is falling. I mean, Tomlin has a unique way to be able to process stuff, to be able to think like a player, and then sort of met out the discipline in a way that isn't going to be a massive distraction. And in this case, I think he may, when he comes out and talks, make everybody think like, oh man, I crushed this poor guy's soul. And, you know, we're bringing the vengeance of, you know, whatever, Zeus upon him. But in reality, I think it'll be like, okay, look, that was stupid. You're going to get fined. And if they lose next week, you're going to find out exactly what the fine was. And if they win next week and then they go to the Super Bowl and he plays well, you know, he'll eventually get docked some money in his final paycheck, but it's not going to be, you know, the huge story that in the moment some people think it will be. But, yeah, it's not real smart. And, you know, as the Patriots thing, to your point, absolutely, he'll blow this up and turn it into a big billboard,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
But, I mean, do they really need that at this point?
No, I don't think so.
You know what I mean? Like, Deflategate, and they took your quarterback, the league took your quarterback away for a quarter of the season because maybe they did or maybe they did not understand physics, you know, and the ideal gas law, and maybe it was or maybe it was not a conspiracy. But either way, I think that still drives them to say, okay, Roger and everybody else, we got something
yeah.
for you.
No, you're right. If this were a special teams guy, Tomlin might be able to suspend him. He's not suspending him. We're in single elimination now, and we are not suspending one of the three best wide receivers. We're not doing that. I want to get to this. Two calls over the weekend, two calls absolutely, to my opinion, determine games. The call of holding on the two-point conversion that Kansas City then had to go back 10 yards and had no chance to make that play again, and the call on the Devin Hester punt return that changed the game from probably being 17-7 to then being 12-10. It was an enormous swing and gave Atlanta all the momentum. Do you agree with both calls?
You know, I didn't see anything definitive on the Hester. I don't know if that was a function of the broadcast and just, you know, having to move on. And I you know what I mean? I don't know if maybe they sort of missed it or didn't get the angle that the official had, but I didn't see that one. Now, if you're talking about Harrison and Eric Fisher,
that's a hold.
That's a hold. Yeah, I mean, we're darn close to, like, a full Nelson at that point.
He
dragged
him to the ground.
WWE territory. Yeah.
He grabbed him with both hands and dragged him to the ground.
I don't know what Travis Kelce's talking about. Like, it's like the textbook definition of a hold.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
so, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the grip and then the extent of time in which he was sort of along for the ride. It was almost like bull riding, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, if you last for 5 seconds, you're a hero. Look, that was a bad matchup. The amazing thing to me is just James Harrison. Like, 3 years ago, this guy couldn't play for the Cincinnati Bengals. They're like, you're done. Like, he's retired multiple times, and when he puts the black and yellow on, he turns back into Superman. And not only, like, week one, he generally starts slow, and at the end of the year when everybody else is out of gas, this 39-year-old freak of nature is dominating games when really, like, the most of the league was like, he's done 3 years ago. Like, Marvin Lewis, who's not really about cutting people, you know what I mean, was like, you got to go. You can't do anything for my defense. And now he's winning playoff games for the Steelers 2 or 3 years later. It kind of boggles my mind.
All right, I'll get to the Steelers, and then I'll let you plug your podcast. The Steelers are going to go to New England. They're unafraid. These two teams have been there a million times. We grant that they're unafraid. We grant that they have spectacular players on offense and that their defense, though it's not as good as it used to be, is still very good. I would be very troubled by this. They went 4 times into the red zone, seven times inside the 25.
Yeah.
And all they got was field goals. Does that trouble you?
It does. It does. I think Todd Haley's done a tremendous job with their offense overall. But Le'Veon Bell was the best player on that football field, regardless of position.
Yes.
And when he got
couldn't get in
within sniffing range of the end zone, you systematically took him out of the game. Not just running the ball, but the screens and stuff like that. And when you did throw the screens, they were sort of obvious that that was the first look instead of a check down, and Kansas City was ready for it. I think there'll be some recalibrations in terms of what they do from a strategic standpoint in the red zone. We'll see if they get Ladarius Green back, their best tight end, who shows up specifically in that part of the field. You know, he's battling a concussion. He's missed a couple of games. And Ben, this year, it hadn't been the season I thought it would be. And especially on the road, he's had these kind of struggles. And they're on a great winning streak and all that. But remember the Baltimore game? They did nothing for three quarters. And then, boom, they scored 21 points in the fourth. They've kind of been hit or miss. So they're going to need to be more consistent. And, yeah, they're certainly going to need seven and not three when you drive 70, 80 yards. But that's kind of been a thing for them at times this year, and they better figure it out. But it should be a heck of a football game either way, and they're a pretty healthy team, so they should be dangerous.
Plug your podcast for us, Jason.
Be More Opinionated Podcast. You can find us on iTunes and the Google. I think it's Google Plus or Google Play. It's one of those two. And
are you on Snapface by any chance?
No, I'm not on Instagram or Snapchat or I don't even know the other ones. FaceTime. I don't. Snapface isn't that. I think Belichick had threw a Snapface out there one time too. So no, we're not on any of that stuff. But just on the web, www.bmoshow.com, and I think we'll be talking some economics of this massive fight this week.
Good.
And how the world is out to screw Peter Angelos. Something like that.
Certainly 40 miles to the south, we'd like to see that happen. But anyway. Thank you, Jason.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Wait, no Mr. Dundalk?
No, I think he's out. Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports, who provides us with probably the best week-to-week stuff that we have is Jason Lockenfor. I wish he did baseball and basketball because we're going to miss him soon. We will take a break. We will come back with news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Jeremy Anderson of Minneapolis, Minnesota. His band is called Radical Chic. This song is called Where'd the Money Go? One more time, we turn to Michael and we say, Michael, if people want to submit their original music, which we love, by the way, how do they do so?
Again, they can email jingles at tonykornheisershow.com.
Okay, Nigel is here with news.
I am indeed, Mr. Tony, and you mentioned the Hoyas, I think, briefly in the show open. Was not a good night for them. They lose to Providence.
5,000 people.
Yeah, no one in the stands.
5,000 people.
Yes.
That's being kind.
I mean, there's
Hoya.
Yeah, I mean, they were great.
So that's what it was.
I have said this a number of times, that there are ghost programs in America. There are programs that were once great, city programs that now barely exist. They barely fog the mirror. DePaul is one of them. St. John's is one of them. And I'm wondering if it's not close. It's not imminent. But I'm sort of wondering what's going to happen. They're 1-5 in the Big East.
Yes.
Their next three are against ranked teams that don't belong in the Big East, but they're in the Big East.
Right.
Xavier from Ohio, Creighton from Nebraska, and Butler from Indiana, not exactly the Big Eastern part of the country. They're all ranked teams. Georgetown could lose all of them and go to 1-8. 1-8. And you say to yourself, what happened? Barry Svrluga wrote a column about this yesterday. Chris is here. I'm not going to dwell on it for any great length of time, but is this a fear that somehow that this is an extended slump for Georgetown, and then at some point you calcify?
They finished 15-17 last year. I mean, you know, I don't, and that includes bombing out their last 8 or 10. I mean, they had a decent, certainly they were in a better place right now last season record wise than they are this year.
They've beaten Georgetown and UConn this year.
UConn and Syracuse, both of whom are incredibly down. Just to know, I mean, both of whom are not ranked and not close to being ranked. UConn, I'm not even sure, is over 500. I mean, I vocally oppose to not, when things are like this. This is a perennially good to great team.
Yeah.
The idea that you can't be good as a relatively small Catholic school is belied by, you know, a two hour drive to the north, Villanova.
Yeah, they're number one.
Coaching matters. The two best players on Villanova, one went to Sidwell, and one and one went to Gonzaga.
Is it because they're only playing to their level of competition?
No,
I was at
no,
the Butler game, but they took them to overtime.
That was the best game they played won that this game. Year, and they lost.
Oh, they won in Syracuse. They went to Syracuse and
Syracuse
won
is not good this year. I mean,
yeah, they won on the road there. I mean, that's not an easy place to play, even if Syracuse is.
That was, and Nigel can speak to this because he's a Georgetown fan too. Mm. That was last night was a lifeless, literally lifeless performance. They were down 15 in the first half. They were down more. I think they wound up losing by 18, but they were down 20-25 most of the second half.
I would be very concerned.
To a Providence team that is not anywhere. This is not, God, I can't believe I'm saying this. This is not Creighton or Butler or Xavier.
Right.
I'd be concerned about North Carolina. Yeah. I'd be concerned about the crowd. Yeah. I mean, I really would.
I know a lot of alumni because I went there, many of whom are very dispirited, not about this result, but about the idea that John Thompson III is untouchable in his job because of his father's
legacy. I like him
legacy.
Very much as a person.
So do I.
He's a wonderful guy. But
I really like him.
Back-to-back down years, and what you worry about is not anger from the fan base, but apathy.
Resignation.
You know?
5,000 people. You can't have it. You're in a 20,000-seat gym, and you're a former national champion.
They're starting to cover
on
over.
On a holiday when nobody's working.
They're starting to cover over parts of the student
section. Whoa, it's like Jacksonville. It's like tarp in the seats in Jacksonville. What else you got?
Elsewhere in the NBA, I know you were at this game yesterday.
Leon went to the Wizards game.
Went to the Wizards game.
120-101 over the Trailblazers.
12 straight home wins.
Yeah, they're now two games over 500. So a nice little afternoon by your Washington Wizards.
What did you see?
What I saw was I missed whatever run they went on. It was somewhere at the end of the first quarter, at the start of the second quarter. My college buddy, Gavin Jackson and I went in the back to get a beer. By the time we looked up and came back, they were up by 30.
Really?
I was like, what the hell happened?
You should stay away more often.
It was the defense. They actually played defense. They made Portland look pedestrian.
Well, Portland's not good this year.
Yeah, but Portland's got some players.
They got two guards.
They got two guards. Yeah, two guards who were completely... Damian Lillard looked like McCollum. He was okay, but McCollum... He was completely ineffectual. And it didn't hurt that they were shooting about 60% in the first quarter. When John Wall went down and hit his first three, and didn't touch anything, we're like, okay, this is going to be a good day. You knew it when he was on. His first shot went in, and after that, Bradley Beal came down and hit like three in a row. It looked good from the get-go.
Those two guards are good, and finally yesterday, they got 36 points from the bench, which has been their worst moment because they get no points. They got 36 from the bench. And hot bench.
The bench was hot.
Kelly
Thomas Satoransky, who hasn't played in a year.
Yeah.
He doesn't play.
At 10-10.
Yeah.
If a guy can go 10-10, why is he never in the game?
Well, he had lots. He brought energy yesterday. Every time he came in, he basically made sure that he pushed it and he attacked the rim. I was really impressed with him.
So, and he hadn't played. Scott Brooks had apparently not liked
Kelly,
him at all.
Kelly Oubre. I was skeptical when they picked him, but he had a nice game. Played 28 minutes. Yeah. He had a nice game, too. He's like 19.
But it's like 4 minutes left, like 4:09 left, and looked at my buddy and said, man, they got to leave the starters in. He said, yeah, but they're up by 27. It's like, no, man, trust me. These guys can find a way to lose it. They can give away 20 points in 2 minutes. And he kept them in until about – he took the starters out, and I have to say – the bench came in and didn't score anything. It scored maybe 6 points from 4 minutes out.
That's the problem.
But they played D. That was the main thing, was that they played D.
I want to stay in the league with the Knicks if I could.
The Hawks beat the Knicks 108-107.
The guy, Schroeder's hit a three.
Dennis Schroeder,
he hit a three at the end. The guy with the
weird hair.
Yeah, with the good bright gold dye in his hair on one side. The Knicks lose by one. Carmelo Anthony misses a shot at the end. The Knicks have lost 9 out of 11. The Knicks are a disaster. They are a disaster. And the most recent story that bubbled up is because a guy named Charlie Rosen, who was a great and close friend of Phil Jackson's. Charlie Rosen was an Eastern League player. He's 6'8". He's Phil's age. He's written books with Phil Jackson. He is considered to be Phil Jackson's voice. Mm-hmm. And he wrote the other day that Carmelo Anthony has outlived his usefulness to New York.
Mm.
So everybody is saying, well, this must be what Phil feels, even though there are a lot of us who would say, well, why not just ask Phil if he deigns to go to a game every once in a while? Why not ask him what he thinks about Carmelo Anthony? Because he signed Carmelo Anthony, not this past year, but the previous year, and should never have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I will take the position now that I took then. What do you want with this guy? He is a guy who helps you win a championship when you're a very, very good team because he's an unstoppable offensive player and does nothing else on the court for you. Why do you want him on a mediocre team? He does not help you. He does not improve your team. The ball goes to him and nobody else ever sees it.
Yep.
That's it. So that's who he is. That's who he's always been. He has great upside in the right team, and in the wrong team, well, the Knicks are the wrong team. So why Phil Jackson signed him is beyond my comprehension. The fact that he outlived his usefulness to New York a long time ago. And so now people are saying, well, Phil Jackson should meet with Carmelo and discuss this. It's a disaster. I mean, Phil Jackson should leave. He should leave. Yeah. He's a coach. He's not a GM. Leave. Go back to L.A. Reunite with your ex-fiance who you broke up with recently. Go back to L.A. Carmelo Anthony, trade him. Trade him.
Get to where? Where do you think he'd be a good fit? Where do you think he'd be the
only,
best fit?
Only a team that needs somebody right now that thinks it's pretty good. Los Angeles Clippers, as an example.
What about the Bulls?
You know, the Bulls.
They have Butler.
He should have been there 2 years ago, and they might have won a championship.
Yeah, yep.
Oh. But I don't know. I don't know where he can go. And get rid of Derrick Rose.
Celtics.
Get rid of Derrick Rose.
Maybe he can fit on the Celtics.
Fine. That's fine. But your team is a disaster. Yeah. You know, build around this guy Porzingis if you think he's any good. But you just – do you ever watch Noah shoot the ball? It looks – it doesn't even look like a basketball.
It looks like something's wrong with his arm.
Yeah. And Derrick Rose left the team.
Yes.
He just left, wouldn't call them, wouldn't take their phone calls. And the next day said, what's the big deal? I only missed one game.
Wouldn't take the call. I did that with Nigel on this show.
But yes. who would have bet 5
sadly
years ago
he came back.
That Phil Jackson would be this bad as a GM?
He's
would you
terrible.
Bet that?
No.
I wouldn't have bet that.
No, well, Jimmy Dolan bet $60 million for 5 years that he'd be better than this. And they're no better. They're no better. They're terrible. And they're in the news all the time. And on PTI, we have to talk about them more. I'm so sick of talking about them because they have no way of getting better. They brought in 2 80-year-old players with bad knees. What do you think is going to happen? Well, we don't play 82 anymore, just play 30. It's awful. What else do you have in the news?
I want to follow up on a couple of things you talked about with Jason Larkin. 401, Steve Young did play a couple of years with Bill Walsh, 87 and 88.
Okay.
88 was Walsh's last year.
Okay.
But it was before he was the full-time starter.
Right, right.
And also, you guys had talked about Belichick's, you know,
fantastic.
Getting everything.
Snap
I just
face.
Want to give you
snap
the
face.
Exact quote. This is he was on WEEI.
On to Cleveland.
The Dale and Holly show. As you know, I'm not on snap face and all that, so I don't really get those. I'm just really worried about getting our team ready to go. And he followed that up by saying, I'm not really too worried about what they put on InstaChat or whatever it is.
He knows exactly what it is.
100%
He's
knows.
Doing that to stick a hot coal in somebody's eye, to do that to Mike Tomlin.
Yeah. We're on to Cincinnati.
This is exactly what he does. He's really smart. He's awful. But he is on the verge of being the best coach of all time.
Six straight AFC championships. That's pretty nice.
Right. And you tell me all the Hall of Famers that he's got on the team. Because
there's Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, and that's it.
I know two, maybe.
And Gronkowski hasn't played. And Gronkowski over the last 3 years has probably missed more games than he's played.
He didn't play that much.
Yeah.
What else does he have? Do you ever look at the wide receivers he's got?
Yeah.
There's nobody there.
This guy's my size, and I'm not a very big man.
Amendola is like 5'8", and Edelman is like 5'10".
Yeah.
There's nobody there.
Right.
And yet this guy, and
he's even got one in jail.
Yeah. Yeah. He would have had the greatest two tight end offense in the history of the world, except one guy committed multiple murders.
Yeah.
Except for that one small
thing.
Factor that he's in jail now.
Did you hear Brady's comments about Rodgers? He's like, no. I definitely will tape and stay up late to watch that bloke play. He does things that I can't do.
Well, he does.
He's simply remarkable.
It's the way he moves.
Yeah. It's just nice to see that sort of, you know.
Here's what fraternity. One of the things that makes Tom Brady great is he knows his limitations.
Right.
So when the pocket collapses, so does he.
Turtle.
Yeah.
He goes he doesn't even try to run.
Right. Well, why would you try? Now, the
although
other thing,
he did throw a nice block in the game.
The other thing he does great, though, for a guy that can't move, is he's unstoppable on quarterback sneaks.
Yes.
He's unstoppable.
He's big.
Well, he's a big guy.
Yes.
Yeah. He's bigger than Rodgers.
Both of those guys are winning at life at epic levels, Rodgers and Brady, and off the field.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a break, and we will come back.
Did you not want to talk about the alligator?
Oh, sure. Go ahead, bring this up. But Leon hadn't seen this until this morning.
I hadn't seen it until just a while ago.
I don't believe that's an alligator.
What could it be?
You think it's a brontosaurus?
I do. I think it's an actual dinosaur. I think it's the last one because its shape. Alligators are far lower to the ground.
Yeah.
This thing has an enormous hump.
They call them humpback, the locals.
What they talk about is when the alligator converts. A lot of time to sort of get its tail in a proper position to walk, it has to arch its back. So that was sort of
what is all that stuff in its mouth? What is it? It has a pelican's.
It's got a rhino in its mouth.
Yeah, it's got it has a pelican's mouth that it hangs.
He'd been to, I think, a Burger King earlier.
Is that, and ate everything?
And ate everything.
Inside. Well, down to the bricks.
They've got their $4 deal there now.
But this is at the Circle B Bar Reserve in Lakeland, Florida. You can see this. It's about
Lakeland, for those of you who are old, is where the Tigers used to train. They may still.
Oh, really?
That's in the middle of the state, Lakeland.
Barnum and Bailey Tigers?
No. The Detroit Tigers.
Oh. Detroit Tigers.
I don't think that's on the coast. I think that's in the
central
interior.
Florida.
Yeah, I think it's central.
Well, gators are everywhere there.
Oh, okay.
So that's
Mr. Hunchback, as this alligator is known, just strolled. You see him emerge from the shrubs onto a path.
It was like Field of Dreams when the players come out.
Exactly.
Come on.
So true.
Exactly,
and he is
look at this.
He's not in a rush.
It's prehistoric.
Yes. Well,
blots out the sun.
How long would you say that thing was?
Well, 20 feet. They think it's 12 feet long, which is not the longest. The biggest alligator, which is over 14 feet, but 12 feet
big
is
enough.
Sort of, big enough to And again, we'd like to point out you don't need to be faster than the alligator.
Yeah.
You need to be faster than the bloke next to you.
Take an old person with you.
Well,
while hunting alligators.
Yes, and we
great advice.
That is information.
Information
for life,
for
this one looked bigger than that one that had the golfer inside of him. This one looked bigger than that.
This one looked big, and it was completely.
It actually looked prehistoric.
He does look like a stegosaurus.
He looked unconcerned with anything going on.
Would you be?
He's like, I'm the top of the food chain. Right. I'm not worried about anything. And you look over, and as he's walking across the path, you see about 8 people with cell phone cameras and video cameras, and you're thinking,
you gotta go.
What are you doing? If he takes a right turn, you're a snack.
But do you think he's so prehistoric looking, it looks like he couldn't be that fast.
Yeah. That's what he wants you to think.
Yeah, well, he's just baiting you. He's like a cornerback, you know?
Seeing people just go up there and just taking pictures of them.
If you haven't seen this, just go to whatever Snapface thing you can go to.
Instachat, and
just get the picture of the giant.
Still one of my very short
books. I think
the
gator's taken an emeritus role on the reserve and is just sort of knows that it's to parade around.
Yes.
I love how they say that the Circle B Ball Reserve was at one time a cattle ranch. I'm sure that didn't end well for a lot of
cattle.
You think
some cattle didn't end up inside that guy?
I've never seen. That's like
huge.
A whale. Yeah. That's like a whale. All right, we will take a break. When we return, we have Old Guy Radio. Neil Greenberg with Fancy Statistics will join us for a very localized discussion. So those of you leaving us now, I completely understand.
Have a great day.
Yeah, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty, this is the MeUndies ad. This Valentine's Day, we're not that far from Valentine's Day, February 14th, month away. Give a gift that they can unwrap again and again, matching underwear from MeUndies. Valentine's Day is near. It's go time for you thoughtful gift hunting. MeUndies has you covered, I like the way they say that, with limited edition matching pairs of undies for you and yours. Fancy dinners and chocolate last a night. Flowers last a week. This year, give the gift of looking great and feeling great every day with the world's most comfortable underwear. As Valentine's Day got you stomped, forget the cliches we just talked about and give this gift. February 14th, don't panic. Show some love with MeUndies matching undies. MeUndies are the perfect gift for you and your Valentine this holiday. They're unbelievably soft. They come in limited edition prints. MeUndies knows that your special someone deserves a special fabric, which is why their underwear is made exclusively out of modal or modal. We never know. A fabric with a touch 3 times softer than cotton. And they have these limited edition Valentine's Day undies. So they're obviously, I'm going to guess they come with hearts or flowers or cupids or something like
alligators.
That. Alligators, they could. And if for some reason you and MeUndies are not a perfect match, they will give you your money back and let you keep the first pair. There's no refund on a bad fancy dinner. There's none. And restaurants close when they overprice, which is one of my concerns, which I read today, and we will get to later, I think.
Well, yeah.
They offer free shipping, and for a limited time, listeners to this station. It's not a station. It's a podcast. Get 20% off their first order, but you have to go to MeUndies.com/Tony K. MeUndies, it's spelled MeUndies with the MeUndies Better Day Guarantee. You have nothing to lose. Don't wait any longer. Go to MeUndies.com/Tony K right now for 20% off your first order. That is MeUndies.com/Tony K.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old guy radio for the day. This is Honky Tonk Women. In the pantheon of Rolling Stones songs, however many you list, this is in the list. If you list 2, 5, 10, 15, this is in the list. We play this because Mick Taylor, who was with the Rolling Stones for lunch one day, Mick Taylor turned 68 years old. In terms of critical commentary, they have survived the death of Brian Jones, the leaving of Mick Taylor, the retirement of Bill Wyman. They've survived everything. They're in their mid-70s, and when they tour, they sell out. Unlike Georgetown, they sell out.
Wow. I mean,
everywhere they go, they sell out.
This is a kick right in the groin there.
Hello.
They're still great. The Rolling Stones are still great, and this is one of their all-time great songs.
And I will say, I know you're not a huge Mick Taylor guy, but he did play on some of the great albums, Let It Bleed and Exile on Main Street.
No, I've got them all. Yeah. I'm just saying he was not there for a very long time.
No, it didn't work out.
He just decided, done.
Well, apparently Keith...
They would have kept him.
In one of the recording sessions, he did not get along with Keith at all.
Well, that's not good.
And Keith would say, "You're so bloody loud, it's great when we play on stage, but we're in a recording studio, can you tone it down a bit?" And so he was like,
Then it was not going to work. So there was a conflict like with the Eagles.
Yes, Felder.
Yeah, or Randy Meisner.
Yes, exactly.
Something like that. Neil Greenberg joins us now, and we like to have Neil Greenberg on to make sense of what is going on. And I understand this is local, and I understand it's going to be about the Capitals, but I need to know a couple of things. We opened the show by saying that the Capitals just scored 7 goals and lost, which is an anomaly in the NHL. It just obviously never happens. The Capitals are scoring at a pace unheard of in Western civilization. They're taking on teams and scoring 5, 6, and 7 goals all the time. They reached the point where they had more points than any team in the league, which means they were on pace to win that President's Trophy again, which was probably their undoing last year. And what I said yesterday, Neil, was do we have some fear that they are just burning so brightly that they will flame out? So what do you make of them right now? What are they doing right? What are they doing wrong? And is there something out there that you say is scary and people need to be aware of it?
You know, it's a knee-jerk reaction with this team to say that they are peaking too early. But unlike other times on the show, I think we're looking at a very good hockey team that's also improved. You look at not only who they are beating, right? We saw them destroy some teams, right? They stopped Columbus, Blue Jackets,
killed
win streak.
5-0, killed them.
Montreal, they beat Pittsburgh. I mean, so they've been winning handedly. But you know, the last couple of times I've been on the show and we've talked about the Capitals, there's always been a concern in terms of puck possession, right? Looking at some of the advanced metrics, the underlying foundation that this Capitals team is built on, the puck possession has been good, not great. But you know, this year, looking at it, they're one of the top 3 teams after you adjust some of these advanced metrics for score effects and venue and things like that. And typically, 7 of the last 10 Stanley Cup champions have been in the top 3 for this puck possession metric. And right now, the Washington Capitals are 3rd, slightly ahead of Montreal. So there are a lot of good things that are happening, and there's no reason to think that they're going to start to implode anytime soon. But of course, that's always the worry with this team.
Yeah, that there's something in the numbers that says, okay, we're back to reality. They will not even make the third round of the second round of the playoffs or something like that. And usually you tell us why we should fear what's going to ultimately happen with them, and now you are saying, no, they're good and they're getting better.
Yeah, there's a lot of improvement. I would say the biggest improvement might be on the defensive side. You know, Tom Reardon has done a great job with this defensive core of the team. They're playing much, much more solid hockey, and I would even say Alex Ovechkin has improved defensively. I mean, he's never going to be a sulky candidate in terms of one of the best defensive forwards in the league, but he's certainly positioning himself better. He's certainly playing better, and he's, you know, he's obviously known most as a goal scorer, but even to get just a slight increase in defensive ability from him is going to pay off huge dividends. And you know, look, there's a lot of there is a lot of luck that goes into beating teams 5-0, right? I mean, Braden Holtby, the goaltender, is playing out of his mind. Probably better this year than he was last year, and last year he was considered the best goaltender in the league. But you look at the underlying foundation, and so far things look pretty good for Washington.
Is this, oh God, I help me for saying this.
Don't say it. Don't say it.
You
don't say it.
Okay, you tend to look at numbers. You tend to look at them and say, this is how we explain what is going on here. This is something that we have to fear going on because of the numbers. Do you spend more time on numbers or character? Do you think that they lose every year? They lose. They just fall flat. It's terrible every year that they do this. Is that their character or is that their numbers? And if their numbers are better, will they not do that?
It's probably a little bit of both. I mean, there were certainly reasons going into past playoffs to say, you know what, they're relying too much on the power play. That tends to be a little bit fluky. I don't know if I would bank on that in the playoffs. You sometimes there was, you know, they're getting a lot of goals, probably more goals than they should, considering where they're taking their shots on ice, how many shots they're taking, those type of things. You know, this year so far, we don't see that. Now, we're only at halfway point
That's
of the
right.
season, so there's
That's
plenty
right.
of time. And, you know, the other thing, once you get in the playoffs, is what's the matchup going to be? You know, right now, if the playoffs ended today, the Capitals would play the Philadelphia Flyers, or more than likely, maybe even the Carolina Hurricanes. And that's a pretty easy, relatively speaking, first-round matchup. But mm-hmm. the Metro is so dense in terms of good teams. If they fall even to the second slot, they could be looking to play Pittsburgh or the Rangers or Columbus or even Montreal. And those are some really good teams that have to get through in the first round. So it also depends on matchups. But, you know, I get why fans and other and even pundits would tune out for the regular season of how they're doing. But, you know, so far the Capitals look like a very good team. Whether they'll be – whether we'll see this type of play in the playoffs is tough to say. But the most encouraging part, even aside from the puck possession numbers, is the teams that they are beating and that they're just demolishing are also good teams in their own right. So this isn't like they're beating up on the Southeastern teams of old. Mm-hmm. They're beating good hockey teams.
Does it bother you that Wilbon rejects everything you live for completely out of hand and confuses – simple arithmetic with advanced metrics and analytics?
Whoa, slow down there, math.
I feel sorry for him only because it's a part of the game that is not going away anytime soon. And I think that the detractors look at it in a bad way. They look at it as a way to suck the life out of the game when all we're really trying to do is just add context. And I would bet that if him and I were to sit down, a lot of the terms that we're using are going to be the same, or at least should be the same, but maybe it's just the underlying way that we get there. But I think that him and I probably have a lot more common than he thinks.
He'd probably take a swing at you if
yeah,
you sat
just
down.
Saying that. Yeah. Thank you, Neil.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Neil Greenberg, who understands all of that stuff and does not go crazy with it when talking, but does go crazy with it. The analytics people go crazy with numbers to get to the conclusion that they have. Mm. And the best of them then can explain it to you without it seeming so dense that you just
and
can't
I think he's great at
it.
That. He dropped a puck possession
yeah,
in there.
Yeah. That seems to be important.
Well, the analytics approach didn't work for the Browns.
No, well, not for 1 year.
Trust the process, Liam.
Yeah, so far, I should mention there was a
couple
of things.
Set the Georgetown guy.
A couple of things that I wanted to mention, and one of them is ratings. I know that people talked about how bad the NFL ratings were earlier this year. I'm just going to read this verbatim from a Wire report. Green Bay's 34-31 win over Dallas was seen by an average of 48.5 million people.
Woo!
On Fox, the most viewed NFL conference semifinal ever.
Huge.
Ever.
That's huge.
48.5. The Sunday game had a 26.1 rating.
Mm.
26.1 rating and a 46 share. The highest rated NFC divisional sure. game since 1997. The game after that, and no game is going to compare to that. And the game after that was a sort of a boring game, the Pittsburgh-Kansas City game, because Pittsburgh, nobody's getting in the end zone. It didn't have real life.
It was all field goals.
That was seen by 37.4 million.
That's pretty good.
That's still a good number. For a bad game, that's a good
number. So everybody who talks about the fact that the NFL now is in this slump, that the NFL is not being viewed, well, it's not necessarily true. And the other thing to point that I wanted to point out was look at, and I say this a lot, and I don't know that this is true in basketball or baseball. I don't know that it is. But in football, you better have a quarterback. Mm-hmm. The last four quarterbacks standing are Matt Ryan, who everyone thinks will be the MVP, other than me and maybe Jason Lockenfor, who wouldn't have voted for him, but he has no vote, as he said earlier. Tom Brady, who's the greatest of all time and is going to the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers, he's going to the Hall of Fame. And Ben Roethlisberger, who has one more Super Bowl ring than Aaron Rodgers, and is likely to go to the Hall of Fame.
He's likely to go to the Hall of Fame.
So if you've got Blake Bortles, or if you've got Ryan Tannehill, you know, you're not getting
well,
there. You're not getting there. You have to have a great quarterback.
The Raiders, with Derek Carr and without Derek Carr. I mean, they're terrible. Well, you know, the Texans. You just dumped $92 million on Osweiler. It's why the Redskins, I think, are so nervous about Cousins.
To play devil's advocate, the Cowboys came within one play of getting there with a rookie.
Yeah, but we think that rookie is great.
One year.
I understand.
We thought the same thing about RG3 in 2012, didn't we?
Yes.
As I remember, Mr.
But he got hurt.
The era of unbridled enthusiasm.
Optimism. Unbridled optimism, yeah. But when you look at the combination of Prescott and Elliott, you think, wow, that could be Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith.
Mm-hmm.
That could be. Those are Hall of Fame players.
Yeah.
And you add Michael Irvin, and you have one of the greatest offenses ever.
But Dez Bryant.
Dez Bryant's great.
The quarterback.
And by the way, you agree, right? They didn't lose. They got beat. Yeah.
They got beat, but you know what? And the rookies played well, and it wasn't like the moment was too big for them.
They played very well.
But again, what happened in 2013 after everybody figured out RG3?
He also got hurt and was slow.
But he went in a completely different direction once people figured him out and figured out this, you know, the system that they were using here. So maybe that's what happens to Dak Prescott next year. I don't know.
Maybe. But I think he's really good. I mean, I do. I think he's really good. Yeah. Gene Cernan, the last man to walk on the moon, died at 82 years old. We've given up that moon deal, right? Yeah. We don't.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, not going back.
No. No, I thought there was talk about going back to get ready to go tomorrow.
What do we get out of it other than prestige?
We've scrapped the space shuttles now. They've decommissioned or whatever the word for is, the shuttles.
There were plans to go back to the moon and then...
To retrieve what?
Well, somebody left a wallet there.
Yeah.
You're going to need that.
Just to continue, you know, to push the boundaries in outer space.
I thought it was about going to Mars.
Because you can leave Mars,
we can leave the moon, rather, using less fuel, and then make it easier to get
the
to Mars.
The truth is that...
In other words, you stage out of the moon?
Yeah. Because it's 1/6 the gravity.
I'm not going to play that away game.
The space game right now is in private. It's Elon Musk and SpaceX and Jeff Bezos and Blue Earth. Those are their two companies. Now their goal is, I think, to have civilians be able to go hang out on the moon. But that's where the innovation and the money is being spent.
Does that mean it's those two guys?
So as you look back on a space program that essentially started in the late 1950s. Mm-hmm. And essentially ended in the 1980s, 1990s with moon people. Was that, and I don't want to use the word vanity in the wrong way, but was that public relations? Was that the United States saying, as John Kennedy said, we're going to land a man on the moon before the end of the decade? Was that to say, this is our power, this is how we show it, this is why we're number one?
And what's wrong with that?
I'm just asking, is that what it was? Because it wouldn't seem that we're getting anything. What are we learning out of the moon? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure we've taken a number of discoveries out, but had Russia not been in that race, I don't know that we sort of join it.
Well, I think it also speaks to a larger,
and I'm going to get a little deep here, so forgive me for this. But okay. I mean, you know, what is humanity all about? I mean, we're essentially a people of explorers. I mean, that's what you've done. What's across the horizon?
Right.
Let's go see that.
Right.
And so the moon is, okay, all right, we've done that. Now we need to go further. And to abandon the project entirely.
Which appears to have happened.
It's sort of saying, okay, well, we're done with that. But I think that there's still so much out there to be explored that it seems a shame that we've stopped doing that.
See, to me, and I was going to start I saw the movie Jackie, and I want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it today because it's going to require some time. But there are moments in a person's life that become the most important. If you are my age, the assassination of John Kennedy is the number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one thing. Person of lesser age might look at landing on the moon in 1969.
I would
might say that is number one.
Yeah.
Somebody else might look at when the Challenger blew
up. That's mine.
And say that is number one. Somebody else would look at 9/11
yes.
mm-hmm.
and say that is number one.
Yeah.
But these are on the list. All of these things are on the list. So the landing on the moon, that was a big deal. That was a big deal.
And Cernan
didn't think that was possible.
Cernan was very upset at sort of the end of the moon stuff.
And
he testified in front of Congress. He's like,
"What are you people doing?"
Yeah, he's like, "My goal before I leave this earth is to make sure that we keep doing this." And, you know, obviously that's a wish unfulfilled. So. Do you know what he did? The last thing he did before he left the moon?
Carved his daughter's initials.
Yes, I never knew that.
And it's still there.
Yeah, TDC.
I mean, we assume it
should be still there.
We assume it's still there. That
went to
and
Denny's.
The souvenir baseball that he dropped off. Yeah. We will take a break. We will come back with. With what? We will come back with jingles.
That's right.
One other thing, because I haven't done this in a while, and I know that my son would either want me or not want me to do this. If you want to buy the gear, the Tony Kornheiser Show gear, Michael, how do they do that?
They can go to shop.tonykornheisershow.com.
And eventually, in our restaurant, we'll have a kiosk of sorts, which is to say we'll have a drawer with junk in it, and you can buy it. We'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you.
Kirsten Onstad, fabulous.
Beautiful.
Jingle thing.
Love hearing it.
Accompanied by her own ukulele. From Jeff Holscher in EY's, what is it? Oh, I should read this first. I'm sorry. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports and to Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post. I also want to thank our sponsors today, SeatGeek and MeUndies. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Google Play. And if you listen to the show on iTunes, please leave us a review. From Jeff Holscher in EY Zumi, Japan. I just returned to Japan on Saturday after spending 2 weeks in the U.S. on business. During my stay, I used the SeatGeek app to procure two tickets to the Packers-Giants game at Lambeau. Seeing Aaron Rodgers perform Kabuki in person was incredible, but nothing compared to the connective tissue comment you made on last Thursday's podcast. To kill time on my 13-hour Trans-Pacific flight from Chicago to Tokyo, I binged on 2 weeks' worth of the TK show. On last Thursday's show, you read a letter from Jay Brockhoff, who's a member of the Camargo Club, and like myself, is originally from Cincinnati. Unlike Jay, I'm not a member, but rather I worked as a bartender and waiter at the Camargo Club during my undergrad studies at the University of Cincinnati in the early 90s. My most memorable experience during my time at the club was serving coffee and Grater's black raspberry chocolate chip ice cream to none other than Neil Armstrong.
Wow.
Yes, that Neil Armstrong,
wow,
who frequented the club as a guest of the Christensen family. I'll be back in Cincinnati for a week in early August to visit my 84-year-old dad. If your summer golfing plans lead you to Camargo in the early August, please let me know. I'd like to take you and Michael out for some Montgomery Inn ribs and Grater's ice cream after your round. Isn't that sweet? That's
very
really nice.
Nice.
Here's a long one from Nick Pietrusiewicz, I hope I pronounced that correctly, who works at ESPN as a senior editor of college basketball. And he writes, yes, Joe Lunardi does a bracket from day one. Day one of the college basketball season. How do I know this? I'm a longtime loyal little who's actually one of Lunardi's bosses. I'm the college basketball editor. We produce Joe's bracket once a week from the start of the season, with a frequency increasing as we get closer to March. Monday's installment. Do you need the URL?
somebody help with the URL again. Anyway, 3 weeks ago, Wilbon's Wildcats made the bracket for the first time since Joe started doing this. Monday's installment had Northwestern all the way up to a number 8 seed. Each bracket does last four in and first four out and next four out. And since we know counting is your thing and going by fours seems a good way to waste time on a plane, imagine how much time you'd kill counting by fours till you got to Binghamton, since the Bearcats are 296.
Well,
296
under 300.
Yeah.
296 with a bullet.
Or right? In Wilbonese, that analytic junk. One last aside, since you're restaurateur now, I submit the name Cheese Whiz. Why, and we get that, and we get pardon the indigestion a lot, which is funny. Why, in the late 1990s, back when these fingers still typed, I was a part-timer at the Washington Post while still in college in Maryland and was sitting by Washington's most revered monuments, the Chat House, and you emerged from your office, stopped and looked around, saw me and said, "You're young and poor. How do you spell Cheese Whiz?" Doesn't sound at all like you, does it?
No.
See, I remember what you say.
Not
that's
at all.
A great
that's
email.
Solid.
The Chat House. Wilbon and I did the Chat House with Mary, yeah. And then we emerged, and I probably did say that. You're young and poor.
Was Jeff Ma there?
Jeff Ma was not there. Jose Gatler in Cleveland, Ohio, Leon. Cleveland.
Homeboy.
I'm trying to get the woman to whom I'm related to by marriage to listen to your show. She's not at all interested in sports, so I keep telling her that much of the discussion is not centered around sports. Anyway, she begrudgingly agreed to try the show yesterday, and here's the following exchange. Tony, Easter Island. That's the one that's been visited by aliens, right? Luke Russert, that's the belief. And at this point, my wife is getting interested. But then Tony, okay, that's good. Let's do football. She gave me one shot. You guys blew it. Thanks.
What are you going to do?
Mike in Lowell, Michigan. I will always remember visiting the Ringling Brothers Circus at the D.C. Armory when I was in grad school at George Washington. The ringmaster intoned the immortal, "Ladies and gentlemen and children of all ages." And I said to my friends, "Hey, I went to high school with that guy." During a time when all three rings were active, I walked over to the edge where the ringmaster, Chris Antikyer, recognized me, told me to stick around after the show. A fantastic evening of fun ended with my meeting various clowns and acrobats while they took down the structures. There was one guy in the stands surrounded by the youngest stars, and I asked who Mr. Popular was. Chris told me he was the teacher who traveled with the show and taught all the children. Seemed like a pretty good gig. You can see Chris Antikyer as the young Dick Van Dyke in the opening night of the Mary Poppins movie, Saving Mr. Banks. Hmm? Isn't that nice? Jason in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Mr. Tony, very excited to hear about your purchase of Chad's. I would go to Chad's in 1989 for the chocolate malts while my dad was taping a show at Fox 5 called City Under Siege with Don Ellison. At the time, they taped America's Most Wanted in the same studio, so I would climb the stairs and sit on that set enjoying my malt while dad was doing his show. Isn't that nice? These are all good, and we have more for tomorrow. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Can I ask a practical question? Are we doing Stonehenge tonight?